Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Lara Chan Baker, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeremy Wartzman.
Hi.
Here at Jackie Winter, our roles put us right in the center of the action, in between client and creative, so we get to see all sides of the process. But we want to see more, so this season we're venturing outside our own industry to explore how others do it. Everything we see and do and use each day involves production. So together, we're going to find out what that looks like for different people and companies, making everything from video games to shoes, building to software, and all sorts of other fun stuff. Please join us each week as we highlight a different industry alongside a very special guest. As always, it's an ongoing exploration of what the hell we're all doing and why and how we're doing it. This week, it's all about producing live TV, and I'm very happy to say that we're joined by the brilliant Anna Reeves. Anna is co-creator and showrunner of That Startup Show, the award-winning live online TV series focusing on the fast-growing entrepreneurial boom and the culture that surrounds it. Before all that, Anna began her career as a lawyer, working with Australia's leading media production houses. From there, she followed her belief in the power of story, technology, and business to be forces for change, working as campaign director and partnerships manager for various charitable projects. Anna has also worked on company culture transformation programs as a writer and producer with global organizations such as Qantas, Westpac, KPMG, and Vodafone. Adding even more to her incredible list of accomplishments, Anna recently associate produced her first feature film, The Space Between, which just happened to be selected as the Australian entry for the Best Foreign Language Film at the 90th Academy Awards. Alongside That Startup Show, Anna is currently exploring the evolution of empathy in a VR documentary. Cannot wait to hear more about that. And continuing her work in storymaking that affects cultural change. Anna, we are so chuffed to have you here with us today. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's hot in here. I know I say this every episode, Jeremy, but it's really hot in here. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm not as hot.
Something's wrong with my temperature gauge. Are you hot?
I'm feeling okay. I've got my coffee, so I'm not too bad.
All right, then. Jeremy, what's going on with you?
Not much. Just been really excited by some of the voices and conversations we've had on this season. We're approaching our 100th episode. And, you know, so I'm just kind of sitting on my porch looking wistfully out at our kind of back catalog of things.
And you haven't invited me, but sure, we'll have to do something special. Should we get into this?
Let's do it.
So, Anna, we've got you here today because we want to pick your brains about producing live content. So let's start here. Can you tell us a bit more about what it is you're actually doing at the moment and how and why you got into it?
Sure. So basically, I'm the CEO and co-founder of That Startup Show with my co-founders, Ahmed Salama, who's our creative director and also a man of many, 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 many talents, and also Sally Gatenby, who's our COO. And she's our third co-founder. So, yeah, I guess we're producing the show. We're in our third season of That Startup Show.
Wow.
Yep, third season. And last season, we had a really massive year. And much like you, the format has shifted over the years, and we've been producing, by the third season, we're sort of innovating. We're always innovating in the show because we are a show about innovation. So we're always looking to do things better, looking to do things better behind the camera and also in front of the camera. So there's always that element to what we do, which is really exciting.
Because I remember when I first saw all the big ads over the trams all throughout Melbourne, and I was like, I remember seeing Ben Law's face. I was just like, hi, Ben. And I thought, what's this? And that was when I really first kind of got acquainted with the show. And what I found really interesting was how it was almost presented in these sort of ads as network TV. And it wasn't until I looked into it further that I saw that it's live online TV. Can you tell us a bit more about that format?
Yeah, absolutely. We like to say we're like the best startup show, TV show, not on TV. So that's what we like to think of ourselves. I guess the idea is it comes from its origins. And That Startup Show actually began in a live environment in a pub. And it began at the time when I just returned from the US. I'd been working on some campaigns over there with some charity groups, as you mentioned. And I actually came back because I was sick and I didn't want to get sick in the US. So I decided to be sick in Australia. Anyway, I recovered from that illness and I was sort of looking about for my next thing to kind of do. And I basically came to Melbourne, ended up at The Hub, which is an amazing co-working space. So that was the first place. And that was really one of the only places at the time that had, you know, there was not a lot of co-working spaces. There were no accelerator programs. There's not the like plethora of tech culture
shifted,
that we have, right? So it was really a couple of co-working spaces and a couple of meetup groups. And I started to kind of go to those and just sort of noticed that there was a bit of a buzz, and I'm like, what's going on out there? And then I do remember a time when I was sitting down at the pub next to the hub, and thinking this would be a really interesting place to explore, you know, a TV show or a series or something. I pitched it actually to my co-founder, Sally. She was working with a VC at the time, and within we got on so where we had a immediate connection and chemistry. And within a month, she'd quit her job, and we were like, okay, we've got to do this now. We've said we're going to go and do this.
Oh, you're in, yeah.
We're into doing. We're creating a show about startups in a pub. Excellent. Okay. I approached Ahmed Salama, who I'd been working with in Sydney on a couple of things with him. He was a really big driving force behind the Free Hugs campaign. Mm. He also had won awards for his work in online, you know, in innovative spaces in film and online. So it was really like his expertise was really, he'd done The Tunnel, which was an award-winning film that launched on BitTorrent and got, you know, millions of downloads. So he was always in that space as well. And he loved technology. So he ended up moving to Melbourne as well. So we had three of us together.
Shifting their lives completely.
Completely upended their lives. And I think for us, the real driving force behind the show was something a lot deeper, though. It was very much around the ability of, I guess, the show to speak to people that may not have really, you know, may not be being seen in the industry. Like if you type in Google search for entrepreneur, you certainly got a certain type of person who was considered a tech person or a startup person. You got Silicon Valley, the show. You got a very, you know, we thought, well, there's so many stories that we were coming across and seeing and people doing amazing things and trying to change the world. But these stories just weren't getting out there. And I think that was a really big force for us. It was like, well, if technology is the thing that is going to shift and change and transform, then everyone needs to be involved in that. You know, the future belongs to everyone. That's really what our mantra was. It's like, and therefore everyone needs to be building it. And therefore we need to see everyone building it. And that was a real ethos behind the show from the very beginning. And I think even Ahmed told me, he said, look, I was a nerdy kid. I was, you know, making websites in my bedroom. And, you know, he grew up in Saudi Arabia and he didn't have a lot of access to anything television. It was all edited and censored. And his imagination was very important. And his exploration and journey into this world was through technology and design and websites and that sort of thing. And I guess when he was a migrant kid coming to Australia, he was like, well, I didn't really know, you know, I didn't have a reference point. I didn't know who was who and how to get involved. And he said, I wish I'd had something like the Startup Show to be a bit of an introduction to me to see, because it's a panel show. It brings in people who've made an impact in the world and they live mentor people who are coming up. So it had that kind of nice combination. So you could see really interesting topics being discussed. You could by people in a fun environment. It wasn't alienating and serious. And, you know, the business culture can sometimes be very serious. So we felt like a little bit of lightness.
Not here at Jackie Winter.
Yeah, I mean, it does, because it's such, you know, you need to have joy. And absolutely. I think that was very much part of why we did it as well. We wanted to bring celebration and joy into this world. And it's not all serious. Yes, we're doing serious things. And there's people who are doing, you know, really quite world-changing startups and technology. But they're also people. And, you know, how do you make that relatable to people out there whose lives are being affected by technology? You know, Facebook, social media, I mean, it's completely transformed the world.
And relatable, that's the key there, isn't it? Because you are producing TV content. You know,
that
you need
true.
People to watch.
Yes, you
well,
do.
Well, tell us a bit more about your kind of specific role. I'm kind of curious. I mean, one of the reasons we're having these conversations is because the word kind of producer has so many different meanings depending on the industry, but it is kind of this, I guess, all-encompassing term as well. So how do you kind of personally relate to that? And how do you kind of describe what you're kind of currently doing in your role there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a CEO. I mean, my background is in law, so I have a business background. I think that, you know, I did that because that is the culture of business. You know, it is in producing world, it's very much you've got different words like executive producer and it's very hierarchical as well. But I think for me, I mean, to say for a start, I used to be in a circus as a kid.
Oh, I was like recently? What can
very,
you do? Do
as
a
trick?
Kid.
Yeah. So you learn to juggle.
There's a lot we have to unpack here, but just yes. You keep going.
But that's part of what you have to do. And that's why a CEO's job is about, it's more than just producing. I mean, and it's different in our industry as well, because you are doing so many different things. When you're a startup production team, when you're innovating in that field, when you have no infrastructure or a big network or anyone behind you, as I'm sure you know, you're doing everything. And that's very similar to startup culture as well. Like you've got many different hats. And that's why we felt that we wanted to have our roles reflect elements of the startup culture with both, you know, Ahmed and Sally and myself. So, but very, very strong and tight team. And we work really closely together because, you know, we are the bedrock. We are it. So we do wear many hats. Having said that, we also have periods of production where we expand. So we like to think of our company as a squeezy box model, which is you have a very core, tight, fantastic team that you are doing things off season. And then when you're expanding, you know, we're expanding up to 40, 50 people that we work with in the production process. I think at one point, our first season, we also engaged the entire community and we had everyone featuring in that trailer. And we had over 100 people featured just in the trailer itself, because we're very community oriented as well. So we have the work we do in the company, and we also feel that our work is outside the company. It's also, we do a lot of mentoring with startups. We do a lot of mentoring and have programs, intern programs for the show, so people can learn and have the learning environment. And I guess I should also mention as well that, you know, we feel like we're a bit of an accidental startup as well. We didn't really set out to do this in any formal way at all. It
had
just
you worked
really
in TV before or done?
Yeah, I'd worked with Cordell Jigsaw Zapruder, and I'd worked as a inside those organizations. So I'd worked at Foxtel and, you know, inside the business end of the business. So I got to see
it's
all of
different,
that.
Right?
Very
moving
different.
Over to sort of actually generating creative. I really want to get into some of the process because I'm fascinated with how a show like this gets put together and delivered each week. First, I want to ask you, why live? Why did you settle on a live format?
Well, I think for season two, we wanted to keep that feeling because for us, the original roots of the show was in a live environment. It was in the pub environment. It was, I don't know, it just worked. And part of that was because the community, the startup community, who was so fantastic in Melbourne in particular, really supported it. Everyone came together and really got around it. They came down to the live show. And it's such a great feeling, especially for the performers. Like our first host, Dan Ellick, absolutely loved interacting with the audience and people. You know, he's throwing things at them. And we wanted to break that fourth wall as well. We wanted to, because I'd been in environments, you know, there's a very hierarchical structure. It's a very, very strong line between audience and what's going on in front of the camera. And yes, and it's controlled, the laughter is controlled. But we wanted to sort of just shake that up a little bit, and we had to build a studio from scratch.
So were the first events in the pub filmed and distributed as well? Was that just an event?
Yeah. So that was from day one. So we partnered with film schools at the time, and we got our first investor who backed us, Alan Jones, who's a really amazing and hilarious tech entrepreneur and investor
not the
in the
other
community. Not
Alan
the not
Jones,
the bad one.
Just to confirm.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's so he really
name.
Believed in us. And that's what sort of really ignited the whole thing. We got sponsorship. We got that support from the entire community. And then we featured the community in the show. So it was by the community for the community in a way. It was because of that. It was done by design, most definitely. And we felt that the performances actually work better because part of startup culture involves pitching. It's a very big part of startup culture, pitching to investors or pitching your story to media or whatever. It's a very big element of startup culture. So there's often demo nights and people come and there's investors. And so that's why they need an audience.
Kind of one shot idea, of not having redos, not having edits comes with sort of startup culture and pitching.
It gets a better result.
Fit. Yeah.
Because people don't make mistakes. There's no retakes, even though they know they can, because it's not live to air, so to speak.
Yes.
It's still live in their minds. So they don't make, it just transforms people. And I love that.
I can imagine.
So what's the current format at the moment?
So the current format from last season, so we obviously, from season one to season two, we set up in a co-working space, which was an innovation hub, one of the big innovation hubs in Melbourne. We had the support of Launch Victoria, a really great startup agency who's done a lot in the ecosystem to help build infrastructure and lots of programs out there now. So it's a plethora of, you know, new programs and support. So this innovation hub is sort of in the heart of Melbourne. And we decided to build an entire studio from scratch in a co-working space with 100 startups in it.
Completely
just
normal.
Just because that's totally what you do.
Yeah, I love it. I love the enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think because we just loved being near our people and we loved being part of the community. And I think again, it was just that thing of let's just see how it works and see what happens. So yeah, we had to build it from scratch, and it was the same format. So this one was over 10 weeks though, and we produced weekly. So we produced every week. We produced, distributed, marketed everything every week. So we ran it almost like a campaign. That was really how it ran, with a big sort of lead up, which is where you would have seen the trams and awareness. And we wanted to show our great new hosts, Ray Johnson and Ben Law, who are just such incredible talent. I'm like, these are some of the most talented people I think
I've
ever.
They're both wonderful.
And great people. And I felt, you know, we want to show them off because they have a lot to say. They're, you know, they're faces that we need to see more of, especially in this industry. So we did that campaign, we launched it, and then we had live audiences again in the co-working space. And we had a lot more. They were quite big at that point. So we had sort of at one point, they were launched, we had only 400 to 500 people.
Wow. That's that's much bigger than I thought would be
sitting
in the audience.
Yeah. It was kind of combined with the launch of the Innovation Hub itself.
Which reframes me as well, the kind of space that you built to be able to house that many people. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was not easy. It was really, really difficult. We had a lot of challenges, namely because we didn't have control. We didn't have a controlled environment. And even in the previous place, the pub, we had a lot more control because it had a venue Well, it had an area for events and venues and bands. Mm. So it had some infrastructure. This had nothing. We had to build it from scratch. We had to erect, you know, it didn't have a lighting rig. We were dealing with heritage building issues. We had to literally transform. We had to build the control room behind the stage area and build it and dismantle it every night.
Why did you have to dismantle it?
Because it was a co-working space.
Because it was a co-working space, of course.
They were meeting rooms.
Mm. Oh, my God. That sounds like a nightmare.
So we did. So, I mean, look, we made it work, obviously, but it was not easy. And, you know, they wanted us in the space. It was part of our deal to have it at the space. So obviously we're going to make it work. And that's what I love. It's about problem solving. And we had an incredible team. It would not have happened without that camaraderie and the consciousness. And we work really hard to create good environments for our crew, regular contact with them and, you know, sharing learnings together, solving problems, that kind of thing. That's how it happens.
Wonderful stuff. Let's get into the thick of it. Can we talk about the actual process of the production of this show? Can you walk us through sort of how it happens from initial concept or each episode to actually out in the world? And we're particularly interested in any kind of specific milestones that are standard in your industry.
Well, yeah, I mean, for a start, I don't think we have a standard because we're just making it up. Like, we're learning it. We had to develop all our own processes, workflows. It's a live environment. It's as live as we like to call it. We're capturing on the night. We've got an audience that we've got to service as well. But I'll definitely take you through the day because I think that's where you get the kind of concept of what it is. We did have a bit of a challenge in that we did actually, for the last season, we lost two key roles 2 weeks before.
Oh, gosh.
So all three of us had to take on their roles. So I would normally probably step back a little bit as an EP working with a writing team because I'm part of the writing team as well as Ahmed. But with this role, unfortunately, I won't go into details of why that happened. We had to sort of be more hands-on and ground. And I'm actually really grateful for that because you are with the team and you're right in the thick of it. And that forces you to be more innovative. It forces you to be more collaborative. And it was great. It was really great to be on the ground with the army. In the trenches, yes. So, yeah. So, you know, they became like family to us as well. And it was great. It was such a good experience. So anyway, I'll take you through. But if I could just say, I have to do a shout out to some of our team members because they were so incredible. Jack, Ruth, Harrison and Kian, they were just the most magical team. They had various roles from guest management right through to producing, but they were really our core.
Well, the team makes it.
They just make it. We're so blessed. I really feel like we were blessed. But yeah, I'll take you through like on shoot days. So I was taking on a shoot day. So Ben and Ray would come in because they're from Sydney. They'd fly in. We'd get them down to the set. We'd go and actually have a bit of a briefing with them over a bit of breakfast. So that was quite good. That was probably the only calm moment I had.
Sounds like it, yes.
Over breakfast and coffee. And then we'd have with the writers as well. So we'd all go through the script and we'd
And how many writers do you have on the show?
So we had up to 5 writers, okay. Including myself and Ahmed. And we had three other writers, Wok Holt from the project, another couple of also contracted writers as well who'd worked on various other things as well. Yeah, we'd go through fine-tuning the lines, that kind of thing. And then we'd send off those scripts, obviously, to the crew. And then we'd have our EP rundowns, which are all ready to go to the crew. And then I would then do a crew briefing and take everyone through a talk of exactly what was going to happen, explain what the show was about, who the guests were. I really wanted them to know what we were doing. Mm. And I always explained the theme behind the episodes. I always made sure they understood why we were doing this, why it was important. It wasn't just, oh, you're just turning up, switching on a camera. I really wanted our crew to be engaged. And what I love about this process was that by the end of it, people were really inspired. And everyone that's worked on the show, we've got a big crew book that we get everyone to sign. Yeah. Everyone learned something. Like, we had a camera person who said, I've just started my own startup. Like, I wanted to create this learning environment. And that actually came from a really sad event that happened to us when we first started. There was actually originally supposed to be 4 of us starting. And our 4th co-producer was Jared Hassel. He was a young, energetic, amazing young man who had set up his own production company. And he was really dynamic, did a lot of stuff with VidCon. He passed away a month before our first season was started. And so that sort of really, it's like it almost didn't happen, the show at all. And he believed in, his vision was to have a place where people could actually come from film school or people learning, they could jump into an environment like this, which isn't quite polished television, but it's something they could learn in. And then that could be this bridge. And that's what we were really true to that vision. That's what we did. We brought in experienced heads of production, and we brought in people that were still like had just come out of film school or needing that experience. And we continued that philosophy and we have the whole way through from day one.
I think it's wonderful you were able to take his vision for that, sadly without him, but to at least really, really implement it and that you continue doing that today.
It was just a natural thing to do. Yeah. So that was really important. So that it does add a layer of challenges with it because, you know, we are also, because it is a chaotic environment. There's not a perfect hierarchy because we are building everything. You know, we were pretty good. Like our workflows, we developed them. As long as you're communicating with people and really making sure that set is welcoming, that's fundamentally bottom line. We had 50-50 gender parity on the set behind the camera, in front of the camera. We deliberately recruited to make sure that people felt welcome. We did not tolerate any rubbish on the set. If someone was, you know, doing something not they shouldn't be doing, we would have a chat.
It's refreshing for the TV industry.
Well, we just felt it's very important and it makes a difference.
Absolutely.
It makes a huge difference to what happens on screen.
So you've gotten everyone up to date with what the, you know, thematically what's happening week and who the guests are that are coming on and what the projects are that you're going to be talking about, then what happens?
Yeah. So then from that point onwards, we sort of split up and then Ahmed was generally behind the stage, so to speak, in the control room, and he was talking to the director, series director, amazing woman, incredibly talented person. And so he would work there and then I would be greeting the guests and I would be rehearsing all of the pitches. So I would spend hours doing rehearsals with them. I'd go through training with them. I would perfect their pitches. We'd get their slide decks looking really fancy.
Because people come on the show and actually pitch their startup ideas.
They actually do pitch it for real. So we do a pre-briefing with them if we can the day before, but often they're just turning up on the day. And so
I feel nervous for them.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of conversations with them, but and we tell them you really should be here either the day before or quite a few hours before. And sometimes they just don't. They just turn up and we're like, okay. But yeah, we do a lot of briefing and we do a lot of discussion with them and we help design and we actually help their businesses. Mm. I think that's probably because of my background as a lawyer. And I, by the end of it, people have gotten tips and they've gotten things that they can use in their business as well. In refining a pitch to 2 minutes or your story in 2 minutes, you start to learn about your business and you start to learn about your proposition and you start to learn about your own story and what you're trying to communicate and why. So we were really quite tough on them like that. And they just were fantastic. They transformed. As soon as it's live, they transform immediately. So that was a great result to see them do that. And of course, the guests were the same. So we had the more high profile guests, we would take them into the green room and we'd, you know, they'd have their makeup done. And that's when we'd start to talk to them. I mean, some guests were definitely, let's see, how do I say this politely? They were...
Some require a little more TLC.
They needed a little bit more TLC. I think Kara Swisher was probably one of our biggest guests to come on, who's a really extraordinary tech journalist in the US. And she was very, you know, we made sure she had all her things, but she... That was the night, of course, where we had the 400 people because it was the launch of the whole space. And they were making so much noise. And at one point she turned around to them and said, shut up.
Oh, gosh.
And so we were like, oh, my God, okay, fair enough, fair enough. And, of course, everyone in the tech industry loves her. And so we're like, Kara has spoken.
Kara has spoken.
And silence descended. So that was great. But yeah, I mean, from there, it was very much, we had the tech run, we do the tech run and everyone more or less, you know, gets into their zone. And then it's literally the audience comes in and we do a pre-show activation. So I would then get up and MC that pre-show activation. We'd take people around. We had little stalls and things where sponsors could actually bring their wares, or we had a demonstration. We do a little pre-show fun with
them. Warm people up.
We had a bar that was just there so people could get a drink.
Like that.
So we made that part of the experience for the audience really fun too. Like, it was really important because they're going to sit through a show, and sometimes a TV recording can be boring. I don't know if you've sat through any studio audience, you're very much told when to laugh and there's a whole process. But we wanted them to learn too. So we would get people jumping up. We'd make people stand up and talk. So we would do that. Whilst there are moments in the show that, you know, if there was the occasional moment we'd have to stop filming or a mic needed changing or something like that. So we would jump in and fill in and do all of that. But it was very much, we didn't have to do that very often because Ben and Ray are great. I would bring them forward as well. I would take them out from behind the stage and I would make them interact with the crowd as well before, because I felt that they needed that connection. Because I know I've come from an acting background many years before. And I know how important that is to have a connection to your audience. So we made them do that. And then they would perform amazingly and they'd, again, interact with the audience and feed off that energy. So, yeah.
What are some of the other real big differences between producing for live TV versus, I guess, pre-recorded? Because you've been in kind of both. So were some of those challenges kind of apparent, or did you have to kind of deal with it on the fly? Is there any kind of specific, you know, situations that you can kind of think of that, you know, you had to work with that were particularly challenging as a, you know, in a production or project management kind of sense?
Oh, yes. Particularly because we were in a co-working space and because things just can go so wrong. Like, you know, you've got a studio, it's here. So we had one example. We have a giant LED screen behind Ben and Ray that we erect ourselves, and thankfully that stayed. So we had elements of the set that stayed there, but the control room was the thing we had to dismantle. And in this particular episode, it just didn't work. We did not know why it was not working. We had done tests. It was working in the afternoon and we were like, why isn't it working now? There's, you know, 100 people watching this, waiting that live kind of, everyone's like, oh, God. And we're like, I remember running around with Ahmed and our editor, and I was like, he happened to be in the audience, and I grabbed him and I was like, what can we do in post-production? We'll do anything post-production, what we can do. And so we were literally troubleshooting this. We had 10 minutes to work it out. So we decided to go ahead. And I said, well, fix it in post.
Ah, those beautiful words everyone hates to hear.
And it was like, can we fix it in post? And he goes, I don't know. And the editor's going, I don't know. Blah, 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 blah. And so the screen was blank. And it obviously does make a huge difference because the audience, the live experience, you're getting the whiz bang lights and the big screen. So we had to, and also we're producing weekly cycles. So we're producing on the Thursday, we go straight into the edit, and then it's got to be out by the next Tuesday, more or less. And we had to engage 20 rotoscopers from around the world to construct the entire screen behind Ben and Ray for that episode.
Wow.
And you would never know.
And where does the budget go? When you say, I need 20 rotoscopers from around the world to construct the screen behind Ben and Ray, where does that money come from?
It comes from the budget.
Yeah.
You find it in the budget. And look, it wasn't as expensive
as you think. Sorry, Ben, you're not getting paid next week.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as you think because we have partnerships and we have relationships.
Yes.
And when you have a problem, it's like, totally, we'll help you out. You know, we totally get it. We, you know, use us for other things. And so, yeah, we'll help you out.
Good.
So yeah, that was probably one of the most hairiest moments, I think, for us.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the things that can go wrong, but also we've talked about how many people you kind of have involved in the show. As you mentioned, it's a kind of growing and decreasing kind of crew all the time, depending on what stage of production you're in. But I imagine there's a lot of people you're trying to kind of communicate with, and you're trying to get work done together across a whole lot of different aspects of the show. So how do you actually coordinate all of that? Are there any tools that you use, or are you super old school sort of phone and text?
No, it's very much Google Docs is my best friend. And look, we've definitely looked, because being a tech show, we're exactly. obviously always looking for great, like, start, you know, I could literally give you 50 ideas for startups that need to happen in our industry, because there's so much duplication. There's people still work with, you know, like I go, the call sheet, why do we need the call sheet? Like, people are like, what? You're not going to have a call sheet. Like, is it a legal document? I don't know. Mm. It's like, we didn't have a call sheet. We had a Google Doc and we did an email and said, hey, everybody, updated, just letting you know, changes are here. Check it out. Make sure you've checked it. And because people were really understood how to use that. And if they didn't, we helped them. Like, we actually taught them how to use things. There's so many areas to innovate in. I think one of the areas that we are working on our own startup now to address one particular area, and that is in guest wrangling in particular. Mm. That was a huge area that we felt could be improved, particularly because we had a policy of making sure we had a diverse cast and had diverse crew. So we looking in both of those areas, working on a product in both of those areas to make it a lot easier for us to recruit people and contact people. But yeah, it's constant communication, obviously, and across multiple mediums, but also that human contact, that briefing I made sure every single team was briefed within an inch of their lives. I had the whole entire team before the show started. I made sure everyone understood why it's important to us. I made myself open and I said, come and talk to me if you have any issues. It was that constant being open and allowing people to bring their own into it and trusting them and going, if you've got an idea of how to do something better, we want to hear about it. Come to us, talk to us. So it's that sort of, I would say my technology tool is people, is communication with people. It's actually being a person. It's the best tool of all, because yes, we can have lots of different fancy, you know, apps and stuff, but if you don't have that fundamental culture, particularly in the crew. And for me, I just have to say, it really, when you have a magical culture, when people are just in flow, the product, it shows in the screen, it shows the results. When people say that's the best experience I've ever had on working, when I have people who, guests who say, thank you so much for making me feel so welcome. This is such a professional operation. You know, you obviously work hard at this. When we have heads of production who work with us from television saying, a lot of our crew all work in television. They're saying, this is like, I haven't had this feeling for 20 years of this energy of we're all a family. And we're all in it together. And that's probably because of my background in theater as well, because I think that's what it's like in theater. I think obviously when you scale, you know, massive film productions, sometimes that can get lost and people silo, but that's no different to company, just normal business culture. So it's just, we have a different, it's the same principles, but we just have a slightly different formula in our industry, but the same principles apply. And people don't realize that. People don't realize you need company culture. You need production crew culture to be good. And for me, it's like, well, you need, why is 50-50 so important? Because I've worked with mainly female crews and mainly male crews, and the best results come from the mixed crews. Like, it just is, with hands down, I don't know why that is, but maybe I'll need to do a study on that or something.
We can do a follow-up season.
A follow-up season on that. But yeah, that's why.
Yeah, amazing. Look, I'm really sad we've got to wrap things up here, but I wanted to close with asking you, in all your time producing this work, what's some sort of practical advice that you might pass on to anyone who is looking to kind of do live TV production or looking to start their own sort of strange idea like this?
Yeah. I think first and foremost, you've got to be 100% connected to why you're doing it. Why is this important? Why do you need to be doing this? Why now? Because that mission, which drives us, the future belongs to everyone, is really important. And it infuses everything we do. And we do more than just the show. Mm. Like I said, you know, we were also trying to facilitate people's relationships and, you know, building elements outside. So I think knowing why and being really connected to that, because your audience and you now, that there's not that great distance anymore. Like, I know that formal structures can create that. But your audience is a tweet away. They're going to tell you if they don't like something. And, you know, it's very confronting when you're just used to going, here it is, and putting it out there. So you have to be in that constant engagement and communication, and you're making it for them. Like, and that's very clear in the YouTube culture in particular. A lot of the next generation have grown up with literally their friend they connect with on screen, who's really close and intimate to them, seeing their face every day. That's the next generation. Whereas, you know, we're still, the television is still that there's a gap between this is what we do and here it is and you're over there. Mm. And it's really hard because I grew up in that, but there's, it's just not like that now. And to me, I always fought that. So I was always a troublemaker in organizations because I was like, we need to constantly, I was so, to me, the audience was so important. It's like, we need to have them part of the conversation, or why can't we talk to them more? You know, I was advocating for this cross, what they call the, was like the online division over here. Mm. And there was the television people over here. And it's still like that a bit today. Like, it's starting to change.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just, it's more important now more than ever. But yeah, I think the other thing I advice I would also give is always be learning, because if you think you know everything, then you're definitely going to set yourself up to, you know, not be open to things, and then you're not going to innovate. And I think that's the thing. It's like, our industry is very hierarchical. So we get trained into thinking, you know, you can only talk to this person or do, you know, and there's a reason for that, because obviously as things scale, yes, you know, you need to have order, no problem. But that doesn't mean you don't have everyone learning from each other. Like, everyone has something to teach and learn. And that's so important. So always be learning, sharing what you learn, and then, you know, learning from others as well. And then I guess our other motto is, whatever it is, we can handle it.
That's production through and through, isn't it?
It's whatever it is, we can handle
it. Yeah. It's what I fall asleep at night telling myself while I cry. No.
Yeah.
I mean, look, that is production through and through. And I just love what you guys do. I think everything that you're doing with the show is so interesting, so original, and absolutely needed in the space. And I think everyone should go and watch it. So, Anna, can you please let us know if people want to learn more about you or that startup show, where can they go?
So thatstartupshow.tv is the first port of call.
Nice and snappy.
Nice and snappy. We are about to launch on a new streaming platform, which is very large. So I'm not allowed to say anything about that yet, but it's coming. So that will give us a bigger platform.
That awesome. Is awesome news.
Yeah, which is exciting. So I'll be able to see it on that, because everyone goes, where do you watch it? I'm like, how do I answer this multi-platform question?
And we didn't even get to touch upon, you know, your background in the circus and in law and all these things. And I think it's fascinating to see how you've weaved kind of all these different things kind of into your career. Now, if people want to learn more about you personally, is there anywhere that you kind of publish your own stuff, or people can follow you, or is it just a show?
Well, I've got my own website, so annareeves.com. But yeah, there's a lot more to me than what I do. And so I'm learning, I'm making my way through that. So I do write, I write poetry. I'm very much a creative at heart. So that's the other side that people don't often see all the time, because as you probably know, as a producer person, you have to take on a certain role, and that can be very all consuming. But a creative producer or a creative CEO or whatever, is all facets that you
can tell
draw
you I relate
on.
To that. I think one thing that I love about this season, Jeremy, is that as we keep talking to people, I already enjoyed the products that these people produce, and I enjoy it even more once I have some insight into how their lives actually got them there and what are all those influences that go into producing that thing. So Anna, thank you so incredibly much for joining us today. We're so grateful, and we hope to have you again sometime down the track.
Yeah, absolutely. We're working on quite a number of other projects now, so we'd love to share some of what we're doing with those.
Please
as well.
Keep us posted.
Awesome.
Before we go, here's what's been open in our tabs this week. So to get these links sent directly to your inbox, you guys know this, you can sign up to our newsletter by going to jwg.is/newslettering, or you can head to our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Not quite as snappy as that startupshow.tv, but it works for us. Jeremy, what have you got?
Oh man, I got, again, so many things.
You're a tab fiend.
I am a tab fiend. But the one that I'm looking at the most, I've been doing a lot of research into psychometric testing. So, you know, we're hiring here at the moment. And I'm really interested in, you know, a lot of these things you're talking about, building culture and something I've always relied on my intuition. But I thought I'd try a new angle here and look at this idea of trying to use testing in this way. And so I'm working with this really interesting company now who is promising that they can clone other staff members. And so,
Jeremy, you trying to replace me since I left?
Well, why do you think I was gathering your saliva and hair for many weeks?
Naturally.
But this is a different way where basically, you know, they do testing of our existing staff and try to find the elements of those people so they can be replicated in new people. So this is a whole new kind of thing for me.
And
it's really interesting because it was, well, yeah, it's something that you really kind of has only been in kind of the more kind of enterprise area. So I'm interested to see how it translates into a small business. So a lot of open tabs around that at the moment. Laura, what about you? What do you got?
Oof, I've got to say, and I read a lot of long reads and I'm always recommending them, but this is, I don't know if it's my favorite read this year, but it's my favorite piece from the New Yorker this year. And that's a huge bloody call. It was an absolutely mind-blowing must read written by John Seabrook, and Bianca sent it to me, and it was titled Can a Machine Learn to Write for the New Yorker? And not only is it just such an absolutely amazing exploration of kind of the latest updates in AI when it comes specifically to text prediction and how that might sort of impact various areas of our lives or various industries in the economy or whatever. But the way they did it, and this is what the New Yorker is so good at doing, is that the sort of interactive element they let in, they actually sort of progressively throughout the piece, they've taken the paragraphs that the author has written, fed them into this like neural network that has then written as though it were the New Yorker. It's been sort of trained on all these data sets from New Yorker and all this other stuff. And you can see what the machine has written trying to be this author. And it's obviously, I mean, it's the way they describe it in the article is sort of, I mean, it is still essentially a card trick, a very elaborate card trick, but it's fascinating to see just how convincing that card trick is and whether it's a card trick or not, how long or not long it might be before we are no longer able to tell the difference. And anyway, it's just such a good article. There's so many articles on this topic, but this is the one to read. It was just phenomenally written. And his beautiful prose makes me realize that I really still want an actual, at least for now, an actual author crafting the words.
Yeah, that's a big topic now. Like AI is massive, particularly around human creativity is the domain where it's just for us. But
we've talked about it a lot on this show and we've talked about it augmenting our own kind of creativity. But I don't know. It's just, guys, please read it. It's so good. We'll send it through in our show notes. Anna, what have you got in your open tabs this week?
Well, apart from all the things related to tech and particularly what you're talking about, which is constant with us. So we're always looking up, you know, I've got 50 different things I subscribe to. It's part of the writing process and it always changes. Oh, yeah. There's been a lot we've been exploring with innovations around climate change. So we've had a lot of those kinds of just looking at what it is. What are the solutions around what we're going to do? We're calling it planet tech. What's the planet tech that we're, you know, because it's not always something that is, the tech industry likes to think of itself as, you know, oh, you can just solve it with an app, you know, but it's not the case. It's obviously, this is a massive problem. And so we are constantly got many tabs of this nature open, but I will share with you as well on the other side of that, which is the endeavors of space and the innovations and what people are doing to get to space. And so I was thinking, is there a particular soundtrack that you would listen to that represents space? So I was looking up space music. Space music. So yeah, I've been looking up space music soundtracks.
What comes up when you look up space music?
It's a lot of sort of like, you know, meditative kind of like.
I can imagine it.
Yeah, like I think really it's like cosmic kind of like.
I bet it's
weird.
Like sort of cheap massage room music, like when you go get a little weird daytime massage. Yeah. Beautiful stuff, people. Thank you so much again for all your time, Anna. So appreciate it. And yours too, Jeremy. That'll do us for now.
Thank you.
I'm Lara Chan Baker. He's Jeremy Wartzman. And this has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Our theme music is by totally unrelated to our company, Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/Jackie Winter. If you want more episodes, archives of all of our shows can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. And to receive beautiful artwork, the links to our open tabs and updates on all things Jackie Winter in one neat little weekly email package, you can sign up to our newsletter at jwg.is/newslettering. You can also find us on Instagram via @JackieWinter, and you can email us any love letters, hate mail, or general feedback at podcast@JackieWinter.com. I'll say it again, I'll say it every week. We love hearing from you. Remember, this is an enhanced podcast. So if you listen to this using Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Overcast, or Castro, you'll be able to see any relevant visual content as we rub it on. And it's like we're just right there in the room with you. If you work for an advertising agency or design studio and are interested in our live extended version of the show called Open Tabs, be sure to check out opentabs.rodeo for more info. Anyway, thank you for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You can sign up to our newsletter by going to jwg.is/newslettering, or you can head to our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Not quite as short and snappy as that shutupshow.tv, but oh my God, I think I said shut up. That is not okay. Let me say that again.